Welcome to Max Planck Florida Neurotransmissions Podcast, live from SFN 2019. Today I'm joined by two folks who work at Backyard Brains. You may have heard of Backyard Brains and their products on popular media such as CNN. They've been featured on Netflix, BBC. Greg and Etienne, welcome. If you could maybe introduce yourself, give us a little background about where you're from and what you're doing at Backyard Brains.
So hi, my name is Etienne. I'm a part-time postdoc also at the MPI, Neurobiology in Munich, and also working for Backyard Brains, helping them for teaching students, helping them trying to figure out how to write a scientific paper, helping with the content, developing new stuff, new experiments we can do, and always also helping out at the conferences.
And I'm Greg Gage, and I'm the neuroscientist at Backyard Brains, along with Etienne and a whole group of us. Mm-hmm. We develop kind of graduate level research experiences for kids from 9 years old, 10 years old, on up. And so we try to do things that you wouldn't expect that kids could do, like electrophysiology, microstimulation, optogenetics. And so we've been slowly building this program up for a few years, and I think we've been quite successful at showing that it can be done.
In many ways, the products you make are sort of like chemistry kits for neuroscience, right? Sort of reaching out to the younger generation, getting them onboarded into neuroscience and the sort of questions that might be asked.
Absolutely.
Is that the philosophy you're sort of taking?
Yeah, so the idea is that we have exactly like that. Like when I was a kid, we had chemistry sets. We had these little gears that you could put together, but there was really nothing in biology, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist, didn't exist for a long time. And so when we started doing this, we started to see these things changing, that you can actually build these kits that kids can use to actually understand how the brain works, much exactly like a chemistry set.
Yeah, and especially when you're just like talking to, let's say, lay people, often people don't really know what an action potential is. And with our kids, it's super easy to explain that they can hear and see their action potentials and how they're generated. And it's always like having a good impact and giving them a good understanding of how the brain works a bit.
So could you give us a sort of flavor of the types of kits that people get?
Well, Jeremy, we happen to bring one today.
So okay.
We could do it, but I think we're going to use you instead. You'll be our guinea pig.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So Etienne has a couple of stickers here. And he's going to put some on your arm, and they have a little bit of gel on there. It's going to allow the electricity to flow from your body into a little piece of metal there, and the electricity likes to flow through metal. And then what we're going to do is we're going to hook you up to one of our inventions that's going to let you to peer in and listen to a conversation between your brain and the muscle. And so what Etienne's doing right now, he has a wire, and he's going to place it on your muscle, across your muscle. And then as the electricity flows from your spinal cord to your muscle, we're going to pick up that action potentials and amplify it using the speaker box, and you're going to be able to hear what your brain sounds like.
So for our listeners, there's three wires connected now to my arm to a little smaller box.
So now we turn on the spike recorder, and once you give us some flexing with your arm, we can actually listen to the action potentials that your lower motor neurons are sending to your muscle and innervate it to actually contract.
Mm-hmm. And so what I'm doing now is flexing my wrist towards myself, and you're sort of hearing that little whoosh sound. So what is that whoosh sound?
Yeah, so these are the action potentials, and so your ear is really good at picking up these spikes, these frequencies. We use the term spikes kind of lovingly. This is what a mm-hmm. neuroscientist would call the action potential, and this is the kind of the basic unit of this, like the euro of the brain, the common currency which all information is exchanged through this electrical impulse called the action potential, and that's what you're sending from your motor cortex to your lower motor neuron to your muscle, and you're listening to what that action potential sounds like as you flex your muscles. Do it one more time. I could listen to that all day.
Yeah, I mean, that's music to every electrophysiologist, so.
So I was I actually did electrophysiology grad student.
Okay.
You said you love that sound. What was the first time you heard that sound?
It's funny. Early in the days of Backyard Brains, we kept the spike counter because, and the reason why is that when I I had no dreams of ever being a neuroscientist, but I walked by a neuroscience lab when I was looking at in engineering, and I saw for the first time a spike, and I heard that spike, and I was so blown away. But I had no idea. I was like an old man by that point, and mm-hmm. I this whole world existed in my body, and I had no idea. So like I got very excited, and I actually became a neuroscientist. And so it was I remember the day exactly. I remember where I was and everything about it. So it was. And so we have talked over the years, and we've talked to other neuroscientists that also had similar experiences, that the first time they heard a spike, they became interested. And so we started keeping track, and I think we're up to like 45,000 kids have heard a spike for the very first time because of this gear. It's kind of weird.
So the story of my first spike is when I started doing my bachelor's thesis in the same lab where I'm still a postdoc. Mm-hmm. I recorded from lobular plate tangential cells in Drosophila, which are like motion detectors. And normally they don't spike. And just accidentally, I got a spiking neuron. And it was bursting like crazy when I like put flashes onto the Drosophila eye. And yeah, I mean, it's just always fascinating if you're just doing an experiment with a little fly and then you have a loudspeaker actually giving you the signals that the fly is computing. It's always like wonderful.
So it seems like hearing your first spike is a very, I mean, I don't want to say essential, but it's like a very key moment for most people in their scientific careers.
Yeah,
how did you translate that from like what most people get in a lab to now branching out to
so that's
kids.
Where the whole idea started. Sorry, the whole idea started as a kind of a self-imposed engineering challenge. And so we're at SFN, if you walk around all these vendor booths, they're selling equipment to record spikes, but they cost about $40,000 to $50,000, right? And so if you wanted to do something in education and bring this into the classroom, it's virtually impossible to do. Your boss, your PI, she will never let you bring it out, right? So we did a poster at Society for Neuroscience, and we said, you know, we're going to try to record a spike for under $100. And if you stop, you know, you write those abstracts in March, and then you know, the conference is in October, November. So we said, you know, we're going to try to do this over the summer, stop by and see how we did. And if you did stop by in Chicago, I think it was.
This was 2008, I think.
Yeah, 2008. I can't remember where it was that year. But it was Tim and I, which a bunch of like weird balsa wood and wing nuts and to make a manipulator. We had the cockroach leg going, and so that was the beginning of the neural revolution, as Etienne has been calling it.
Yeah, I mean that's what we're trying to how we try to like hook the people is to like tell them that we're like trying to start something that everyone can be part of. And I mean, Backyard Brain started calling that the neuro revolution, and since ever then we're using that word, and I kind of like it.
What was the reception like during that first SFN? Were people
people were. So we've gotten pretty good at being not taking ourselves too seriously, mm-hmm. and so we pitched it as the cure to the zombie revolution. So if a zombie apocalypse were to happen and all the vendors turn into zombies, and you want to save your loved one, it has to be a neurological disorder, so it's changing their behaviors, obviously. Mm-hmm. So we're neuroscientists, and we want to save our loved ones, and so we could break into Radio Shack at night, and we can steal some op amps and some resistors and some wood from hardware stores. And that's the story that we sold it. So because I think if you just had a poster about a single channel bioamplifier, people would be interested, but not really that interested. But if you did this thing, which is completely weird, it all of a sudden, so it got picked up. You know, we got a big crowd of people. They're all like loving it because they're like, it's cool. And then we show the cockroach leg, and you know, this is only a prototype. You know, one day we're going to have bigger pieces of wood, we can make it bigger. And so then we got picked up by the journal Nature, and it got picked up, and we're on the Neuro podcast, and all of a sudden, like this silly side project that we were working on, I was getting more and more emails about it than, you know, the real. I'm doing all this really fancy science and publishing these awesome papers, but not once did like, hey Greg, thanks for publishing that paper on the fast blinking interneuron. It's super important. You know, keep up the good work. You know, but like this side project, I'm getting that all the time. I'm like, and at some point, like we realized, like maybe the side project could be the real project. And so then, so we started the company in grad school, and we've been growing ever since.
And you're your company has actually grown even beyond the U.S., right? You have folks all over.
Yeah, so this is where Etienne comes in.
Yeah, I met the guys at the Methods in Computational Neuroscience course in Woods Hole. And I'm a biologist, and I just wanted to learn more about the theoretical side of neuroscience. And I have to admit that most of the stuff was just above my head, and I could not understand the theoretical framework of many people trying to explain it to me. But then talking to Greg and Tim, it felt a little bit more tangible, and also it was easier to understand what they were actually doing, and I got hooked. And I always wanted to travel and bring neuroscience actually to lay people. And that's when I also saw that it's so easy to teach people about neuroscience with Backyard Brains kits. And then I was traveling for 1 year through South America and just giving talks everywhere in schools, universities, or just in just on the street talking to people. And everyone was also so grateful for that I'm doing stuff like that, and it felt more rewarding than doing actual research. And I think Greg and Tim, they also kind of liked it, and now I'm part of the team.
Yeah, so it's even collaborative even more than that. So this summer, we spent the entire summer with Etienne and the Max Planck Institute in Germany. We did a bunch of incredible research projects that were turning into activities that could be done in the classroom. So everything from, we did, I don't remember.
We did the event-related potentials, how you can detect them, the surprise signal called the oddball task, how you can measure brain waves. And the idea of the whole summer course was to teach the students how to write a publication. And so we had the two EEG projects.
We had another one on targeted memory reactivation. So it's if you learn a task and then you take a nap, and then you can cue them while they're sleeping, and then the ones that you've cued them for, when they wake back up again, they do better at it than when they fell asleep. All right, so it's weird, and it works. And we read it in Science, we tried to reproduce it, and then sure enough, it works. So it's kind of cool. And then tell me about your ERG project, it's cool.
Yeah, so we're now trying to make a low-cost and do-it-yourself electroretinogram. So to see how insects perceive the world, and you just have to put a wire on top of the facet eye of an insect, and then you can shine light onto the eye with different wavelengths. So you go from infrared to red, green, blue, and UV, and then you can measure the sum potential of the photoreceptors. And like that, we want to show how sensitive different insects are towards different lights, and then hopefully can also map this to their ecological niches, and hopefully also raise the awareness of the protection of biodiversity, how important it is to actually know what is surrounding you, which insects there are, how you protect them, because they are the bottom of our food chain, and we need to protect those.
I think for me, that one of the surprising things looking into your company is I often think of you as sort of a general public facing company. Your mind control kit is one of the favorites for some of the outreach that we do. But I was actually kind of surprised that you have a lot of opportunities for fellowships for folks already in science in terms of undergrads. Or were the folks you were working with mostly undergrads, junior grad students? Or?
Yeah, they were mostly undergrads. Some of them started grad school now. But I think that we did a good job in preparing them a bit, that they know how the scientific process is, that they have to be patient, that not everything works from the beginning, and it just have to be just going on and trying stuff out, and that's what the Backyard Brains gear is for, that you're just doing the experiments yourself, that you're trying and trying, and then you see what comes out and how you can improve your experiments.
Yeah, I look at Backyard Brains as an alternative academic institution. So you mentioned these students. So we don't have a graduate program. We don't have students that we have in classes. And so we take students over the summer and we kind of train them as classic neurobiologists, like, to do these electrophysiological experiments, and then each one is given like a prep, and they design everything around it to be able to do something. And then the goal is what Etienne is saying, is to get them to actually publish that so that other people can use that work, you know, in the future.
So if we can maybe loop back around, okay. You guys got your start at SFN. You're now still at SFN. What are the things that you're trying to do at SFN? And I guess what is your typical day at SFN like?
Yeah, so the most of it, it's funny because we've moved a lot into K-12. So like we are working a lot with, we have more sales to high schools and middle schools than universities that are, and it was kind of cool. It's bizarre because when we started, there was no neuroscience being taught in high schools. And so we've overreached that one. But a lot of it is coming back and connecting with friends and colleagues, obviously. But more importantly, you learn about all these new techniques that are coming out and things that we can then try to replicate in a cheap way, in a DIY way, to be able to do that. So like we've been, since Back Air Brain started, there's the epigenetics thing started taking off and a bunch of the other sort of imaging things. And we now are working on a deep lab cut, so using machine learning to be able to, so like we find out about that by coming to SFN and talking to these colleagues.
And at the same time, of course, like we have a super busy booth and doing live demos all the time. But they're like always also like new and interesting people just passing by, giving you a lot of feedback, giving you like new input, what you can actually do. Yesterday, we had a guy passing by with Tourette syndrome, and he wanted to see his EMGs recorded, how does the difference between a voluntary movement and when one of the ticks is actually moving his arm. And we recorded that data. I could send it to him by email, and now we can like just dive into like all these different questions that like just also people ask us, because most of the times we also don't really know like we don't know how to explain the stuff to them, and then we're just saying let's just be scientists and we can figure it out together. So that's the thing, like giving everyone the opportunity to like be the DIY scientist.
What's next for Backyard Brains? Have you seen anything interesting that you really want to? I mean, you've already mentioned.
Yeah, so Etienne and I met at a computational neuroscience course at Woods Hole. Mm-hmm. And we've been back for many, many years teaching that course. And it's been the hardest thing in the world to make computational neuroscience sexy for a school kid. You know, it's like, I mean, it's fun, it's exciting. You know, we like to do it and get it to work. But you're just sitting in front of a computer coding, and so we have been racking our brains for the last 6 or 7 years, and we think we've got it now. So we have some new stuff we're working on neural robots. So these are computational neuroscience or computational neurons that are integrating fire, but you wire them together, and then they hook up from a camera for the eyes. And if they see, they can do image recognition, and then they'll make neurons fire, and you can drag those neurons over to another neuron, and you can have them eventually get to a motor. So you get so you get complete behaviors in a robot that's not being programmed, it's being even learned, because we can do dopamine cells that change these things. So this is like the next generation will be hopefully a little bit more computational.
These are sort of the systems that are underlying things like Google's open mind.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a great teaching tool for like machine learning and AI type stuff. But they're actually using, so just those things use more computational based of artificial neural networks. But these are actual neural networks. They're like real spiking neurons. And so we're learning a lot about how the excitation and inhibition balance has to be right in order to make these neurons work. But it's once we get this working, we hope it's going to take off.
Yeah, and so I'd say like my little baby is the biodiversity citizen science project.
Okay.
That we like start with the ERG, and hopefully at some point can then also grow into like other species, and that we have like a collective project where everyone can contribute to, that like everyone is kind of collecting data for mapping biodiversity.
Right, you guys have products even, I mean, we typically don't think of plants as things that would require electrophysiology, but you have products that are looking at things in Venus flytraps too, right?
Right, there are two plants so far that we know of, right, that have action potential. So it's the sensitive mimosa and the Venus flytrap. And I'm always amazed when I just like see the action potential of a Venus flytrap, because I just cannot think of a way how this could evolve and like how this actually made its way to use action potentials to trap flies. I mean, it's just it's incredible. And there's a lot of stuff to still investigate. So the exact mechanism is still unknown, and with our planned spiker box, everyone can become the plant physiologist at home and just like try new stuff out and see like how the mechanism behind is. And it seems like that also like every fly trap is kind of individual, responsive to the stimuli. Some close when you, so first of all, the mechanism of a Venus fly trap is that it has one action potential if you trigger the movement of one of the hairs inside, but then it needs a second one in within, let's say, 10 to 40 seconds to actually close. So it kind of makes this computation to know that there's something moving inside that it wants to trap. And how does, let's say, how it's actually making the closure, this electrical signal into a mechanical movement. This is, I think it's still not known. And so yeah, like this, everyone can investigate it.
Yeah, there could be, who knows, like a Nobel Prize buried somewhere in that Venus flytrap. Yeah, so these are like, what's cool is that if you are patient and you want to do this experiment, you can actually be on the cutting edge of science with some cheap DIY gear, because it's like you're at, there's not a lot of people studying the Venus flytrap. So you'll be one of five scientists in the world if you pick up this thing and start working on it. So it's kind of cool. Maybe you have a poster here at SFN in 2020.
Well, I must say, looking back, I'm kind of envious that a lot of these things weren't available back when I was in high school. We're just about out of time, so if folks wanted to learn a little bit more about Backyard Brains, where could we find you on the internet?
So we're pretty working a lot on social media now, so you can visit us on Facebook or on Instagram, and our website is backyardbrains.com. Pass by.
All right, thank you so much, Jeremy.
Yep, thank you for coming by.
All right, cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Neurotransmissions. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and now on Spotify. Connect with us on Twitter at Neuropodcast and at facebook.com/neuropodcast. This has been a production of the Max Planck Florida Institute for Neuroscience.